transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
How you doing? And welcome to the show. This week we're chatting with our gardening expert Tara Nolan on getting things started in the garden for the spring and summer months. I also talk with author and interview Dr. Tamara Nashman. She's got some wonderful tips on how to present yourself and get that dream job. We then delve into the world of piercing and speak with expert Devin Wood on if you really should get that navel or tongue ring. Stand by as well for a killer remix from Beyonce. Lots to talk about. Let's hit it.
Capture your need for sound.
After a long but necessary winter in many parts of the world, we are now heading into the spring season, and this is a very busy time for anyone who is tending to flowers and vegetable gardens. To help us get prepared for what needs to get done in your gardens this spring, please welcome back to the show our resident green thumb expert, Tara Nolan of CanadianGardening.com. She's the web editor. She also blogs about gardening on the site as well. Tara, thanks for making time for us again on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Tara, after, you know, this long winter that we've had here in North America and throughout other parts of the world, it seems like it's time for action as we march sort of through spring. What should our first tasks be as we sort of head outside to those flower and vegetable gardens?
Well, definitely you want to sort of pull out all of your gardening materials. So your tools, you might want to give them a bit of a sharpen and, you know, get out all your pots that you're going to be planting your planters in. You might want to disinfect them and clean out all the dirt from last year. And then you want to get out in the garden. And I still have, you know, leaves and dead things that, you know, have been there over the winter. So you want to get up all of the dead stuff so that nothing rots underneath and that all the new growth can come up.
And with regards to the gardening tools and the implements from last season, just, I guess, a quick backtracking question to the fall. You know, I'm assuming people should have put them away properly for the winter and not just left them dirty, though, right?
Absolutely. It's always a good idea to get the dirt and the moisture away from them so that they don't rust when they're in your garage or in a bin somewhere.
And I'm assuming very important, like you said, to store them properly so that they don't acquire the rust, you know, as you try to pull them out in the spring.
Exactly, especially if they're outside. So I have mine in a bin, but I always try to get all the dirt off. I don't put them away wet. And I just try to, you know, make sure that they're in good working order when I put them away for the winter.
And a question for you, as the novice gardener that I am, even though I'm a farm girl, when is a good time to purchase gardening tools? Is it better in the fall or in the spring? Because in the spring,
I was going to say right now.
Oh, really?
Okay. In full force. Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed that our nursery at our local grocery store is ready to open as well. So everything is going to be out now, and now's the time to start picking up, you know, gardening gloves and anything that you need for the garden.
Okay. And, you know, after these winter months that we've just gone through, I think a lot of us are sort of itchy to get out pruning, but I'm assuming we need to not be too trigger happy. What do you prune now and what do you not prune now?
Well, you definitely don't want to prune any of your spring flowering shrubs because they're all just about ready to bloom. So that's lilacs, forsythias, anything that blooms within the springtime, because what you're doing is you're getting rid of all the lovely blooms that are just about ready to come out. The best time to prune those is after they finished blooming, but before the summer when they start to regenerate their buds for next year. So right now you can prune things that perhaps bloom in the summertime because you're not going to be damaging anything like a harder, you know, woodier plant.
And would this also be a time, because I'm assuming, you know, over the winter months, I think a lot of us have cedar trees or, you know, maybe one or two. I think sometimes during the winter months, they get damaged from the wind or maybe another branch that's fallen on them. Is this a time to sort of deal with them as well?
Exactly. Yeah, you can start dealing with those for sure.
Okay. Joining us on the show right now is Tara Nolan. She's the web editor at CanadianGardening.com. Make sure you check her out, CanadianGardening.com. And are there any flowers or vegetables, Tara, that we should be sort of thinking about planting right now, or is it too early?
It's a little early for flowers right now, but there are things that you can put out. A lot of stores you'll see have pansies right now, for instance, and they won't be too damaged by, you know, a late frost. So, you know, there's some lovely little pots and urns out there that you could, you know, set out to get some color in your garden right away. As far as vegetables, it's a little early for some things, but you could plant cool weather crops. So that's things like sweet peas and lettuce and onions. And you might want to, you know, you can direct sow some of those into the ground and get an early crop before you even plant your other vegetables like tomatoes.
Is it too early for you to be bringing out some of your indoor plants from the winter, like because it's still fairly cold?
You definitely want to wait until after all threat of frost has passed. So it is definitely early to bring those out right now, at least where I am.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think you're near Toronto, right? And then I'm near Montreal and it's still freezing. So there you go. Now, not that I want to sort of put pressure on anyone, you know, who's deciding to get into the whole gardening world, but is it safe to say that you sort of need to be, I guess focused is the word that we'll use as you sort of march through spring, because I'm assuming that the decisions you make now are going to affect the outcome of your summer flower and vegetable gardens.
Well, it's definitely good to plan ahead, but I think gardening is for people that, you know, perhaps think they have a black thumb, and then it's also obviously for the experts that are itching to get outside. So what we try to talk about on the site is not making it too intimidating for people so that they're not scared to go outside and you know, try to plant things even if it is maybe a little bit later in the season. So as far as just cleaning out your garden, I mean, it's good to be diligent about that sort of thing. And a lot of it's even just for aesthetics and curb appeal. But certainly, you know, if you're new to gardening, there's definitely things that you can do, but you're not going to necessarily ruin anything in your garden. And I think that's important for people to know if they're new to gardening.
Okay. And a question as well. You know, right now, I think it's still very wet for a lot of people, depending on where they live.
Yes.
And is this a time now where people should be paying attention to where those wet spots are, whether it's in your garden, around your garden, in the lawn or on the lawn, so that you can sort of deal with that with drainage? You know what I mean? Like, because sometimes I think too much damp, that creates rotting, does it not?
It can, but definitely just let things dry out. I mean, we've certainly had a lot of wind lately, so a lot of things just tend to dry out on their own. And also be careful when you're sort of tromping around the yard and getting to your gardens that you don't, you know, sort of trample through those wet areas and just give them time to dry out naturally and don't tamper them down too much. I was just going to say, you know, when you are taking the dead things out of the garden, be really careful about not disturbing any of the new growth that might be coming up. You know, I have some herbs that are just sort of sprouting their little heads, but, you know, I've been very gentle about getting some of the leaves away from those areas. So if you know that things are coming up in certain places, perhaps just, you know, use a little bit more care around those spots.
And can you take some of the refuse, I guess we'll call it, from, you know, the dead leaves from the winter and all that stuff to start a compost pile now? Or is that stuff that needs to go?
I would probably get rid of the leaves from the fall. You want to make sure there's no diseases on the leaves that could have maybe happened over the winter. I would probably start fresh, but certainly some of the drier things, like as long as it's not a big sopping wet pile, like some of the dry stuff definitely you can put into your compost, as long as you know that the trees, the leaves aren't diseased.
I have a question about furry animals. Is is this a time of the year that you should be sort of maybe looking how to dissuade certain animals, like wandering cats, you know, that are going to be traipsing through your garden? Like, is this a time to sort of figure out how you're going to deal with them, or do you sort of deal with it on a case-by-case basis?
I think it's ongoing. I mean, I have a big problem with squirrels in my garden, you know, and I've tried numerous things over the years. They love the bulbs in the fall, for sure. They like to move them around. So I found some things sprouting where they shouldn't be in the spring. But I think definitely case-by-case basis. I don't have a problem with cats in my garden, but I know some people, you know, their garden's like a community litter box. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just something that, you know, might happen occasionally or might happen all the time. So I think you just need to deal with it as it comes.
And is there a good place for people to find information right now, Tara? Like, you know, for people that are just starting out, this is their first spring season where they're trying to be a gardener. Where do they go to get information?
Well, I mean, I'd love to direct you to CanadianGardening.com. We have lots of how-to articles, especially for beginners. And I blog as sort of the budding gardener, so I'm constantly learning. So I record that stuff in the blog as well, so people can certainly go there. But there's lots of resources out there. There's websites. You can find a lot through Twitter now. And there's a lot of great new gardening books out for spring as well.
Do you suggest that people, you know, watch on, you know, home and garden television, whatever, like these outdoor shows, or because sometimes I feel like so inadequate when I watch when I watch the cooking shows and when I watch these other things, I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm going to be able to do this. But do you suggest that people just sort of watch and maybe get an idea and not put too much pressure on themselves?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, they're definitely inspirational. So they can definitely put you into that spirit of gardening and make you want to get out in your garden and create something. But I think definitely, you know, to take it with a grain of salt is good, because you don't want to put too much pressure on yourself. Like you said, some people don't have the time to get out there every single day. So that's another tip. I mean, you know, if you really want to go gung-ho and plant a massive vegetable garden, you got to make sure that you have the time to tend it during the summer.
Before I let you go, because we are going to have you back again, you know, as we march towards summer, what would be your top tips right now for people, just to sort of reiterate as they march to, you know, march through spring and head towards summer, to keep in their minds and actually follow through with?
Well, definitely get out in the yard. Be careful around, you know, some of the delicate areas, like you said, that might be wet. You know, and just start clearing things away and getting things all tidied up and ready for when you can actually get out there and plant, because there'll be lots of great things coming to, you know, the nurseries and grocery stores, you know, in the next few weeks. And of course, ramping up to the May 24th long weekend, which here is sort of our big weekend, where I think the nurseries do the best throughout the whole year, because it's really usually the time that you can get stuff in the ground.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Tara, thank you so much for hanging out, and I can't wait to have you back on the show in the next
month
or so. Awesome. That's Tara Nolan, again, with CanadianGardening.com. She's the web editor, and she also blogs for them. Make sure you check them out, CanadianGardening.com.
Capture your need for sound.
One of the most nerve-wracking tasks in life is going out on job interviews. It's never easy to put yourself on the line trying to convince someone that you are the perfect candidate for the job. Well, fortunately, we have an expert in the field of interviewing. Please welcome educator, guest speaker, and author of the book, Five Secrets to a Successful Interview, Tamara Nashman, to The Kelly Alexander Show. Tamara, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Kelly. Thank you for having me on.
Now, Tamara, what's the first thing you tell someone about to head out in the job hunting market, you know, whether that's a university grad or someone who is maybe making a career change?
The first thing I would tell anyone is to make sure that you sit down for, you know, 20 minutes and make a list of all the things that you are really, really good at, what your areas of gifts and talents might lie in, what your unique abilities are, and make sure that you're perfectly aware of what you have to offer any company, any group, or any interviewer, so that your level of confidence is boosted before you step out the door to go to an interview.
I think a lot of people hitting the job market need maybe like a mental shift, because I think a lot of us feel like we're never going to get that dream job.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's a huge level of fear and concern and worry that's out there about people right now trying to look for jobs. You know, the thing, Kelly, people really need to do is take some time to research companies. Go on Monster.com, Brightstar, online, and look in areas of your interest and see what's really available out there. Because there's a whole lot more available than you think. And just knowing that is very encouraging.
Okay. And Tamara, how important is your resume?
Well, I think it's incredibly important. And since you brought that up, let's talk about that just for a second. Let me tell you something that keeps people from getting hired, especially if you're doing an online resume and you're submitting it to any one of the online resources in job search. You've got to make sure that you make that resume as simple as possible. You want to make sure that you don't put a physical address on the resume or continuous lines, because computers read that as a page break and your one-page resume has suddenly gone to seven pages that no one's going to read. You don't want script fonts. You want logos and fancy artwork. When you're submitting an online resume, you've got to keep it as simple as possible. Keep it in Times New Roman or Arial. Because you'll keep yourself from getting hired that way. That's an important tip.
Wow, I had no idea. I hate online applications. They drive me nuts.
I know, but you got to realize that if you don't, if you're not willing to submit things online, then you're going to cut yourself out of huge possibilities for hires.
Okay. And then when it comes to an actual resume or CV where you can actually physically send it in, I'm assuming that you still have to follow the simple rule, but can you sort of add any bit of flair to sort of make yourself stand out, or is that done?
I think that you keep it to one page. I mean, everyone says that. I think you need to keep it to one page. Here's the problem that I see in so many resumes. People get in their mind that, oh, they've got to list every single thing they've ever done in order to impress an interviewer or a company or a job. Completely wrong. That's completely the wrong mindset. What you have to do is take that one page, pick out the highlights of your life where you did something that made a difference for that company, for your world, whatever it was that sets you apart in some way. those are the things that you truly list. And all the extemporaneous things that you just feel like it has to be on there, you know, isolate those and cut them out and keep it as simple as possible.
I'm assuming when it comes to a company that you are applying to, that it's very important to know what they're about, because I think that so many people just apply and then hope for the best and they don't really know what that company is about.
That's such a great point you just made. Really very, very insightful that you said that, because there's so many people that, you know, we're just desperate for work, we're desperate for jobs, and we don't. And the problem is, if you don't research a company, and anyone can do it, you can go online and in a search bar and Google a company. Not only will you get their website, but if you go into discussion forums or blogs, blog directory, and type in a company name, you're going to get all sorts of feedback about that company from people who work there, who've worked there, people who love it, people who are disgruntled. You're going to find out so many things about a company that you would otherwise not know if you don't research them. The problem is, if you go in thinking you want to work somewhere and say you do get hired, and you find out it's the worst thing you've ever been in, because you just didn't find out what was really entailed in the particular job or what the company was really about. And here's another thing. You could possibly take a job with a company that, you know, in 6 months could be defunct. I mean, you literally have to research it before you walk through the door so that you go in armed and dangerous.
Is it a delicate balance when you do go in, you know, to do the interview and you have X amount of knowledge about the company? Because I guess it's a fine balance of letting them know that you know, but not being like too much of a keener, because that's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, most companies are going to be very impressed with the fact that you've researched them. I mean, and that's one of the big complaints I hear from those who are looking to hire people. And I hear this all the time. They'll say, oh, yeah, they came in and they didn't ask any questions. They didn't know anything about us. They were prepared to answer, but they didn't know anything about us, and nor did they really have any solid questions to ask. And I'm going to tell you that companies are impressed with people who walk in and know how long they've been in existence, you know, how many offices they have, what exactly their product is about, how they're perceived in the market. I mean, there's so many things that can really impress an employer if you've done your homework.
Joining us on the show is Tamara Nashman, an educator and author of the book, 5 Secrets to a Successful Interview. Make sure you check her out at TamaraNashmanInterviewDoctor.com. In this day and age, is it still important to dress to impress your potential employer?
Oh, there's no question. There's absolutely no question, and perhaps even more so. And I find that graduates coming out of college, you know, we've got a generation of reality television, MTV, and Jerry Springer. So, I mean, honestly, students that are graduating don't get the seriousness of really dressing to impress. And so that's one of the huge topics that I teach on all the time. But yes, absolutely. And I always tell people, if you can take a look at the culture of the company, if you can literally walk in the door and see how people are dressed, it will give you some indication how you need to dress for an interview, which would be a step above what you're seeing at the company at the time. If you don't have that luxury of actually walking in, I always just say, make a phone call. Hey, I have an interview next week, and I would just like to know how people, what is their general attire? What is appropriate attire in your office? Ask a question and find out, so that when you go in, you're definitely a step above what everyone else is wearing when you go in there.
And another question, I guess, about sort of personal, not really appearance, but just when you make that initial, you know, first glance at the interviewer and they see you, is the handshake still important too? I think my dad would want me to ask you that question.
Yes, it is. In fact, believe it or not, I actually train people how to shake hands properly, because there are ways to do it and ways not to do it. You definitely want to make sure you connect palm to palm. The person who initiates a handshake is the one who releases first. It's really a 3-second rule, and you want to make sure that while you're shaking hands, you have complete eye contact. Never too firm, certainly never too loose. Find that nice balance where you're letting them know you're genuinely interested. There needs to be warmth behind the handshake.
Okay. And what happens if you are being interviewed by not just HR, but by the actual, you know, boss of the department you would be working in, and they have an awful handshake? Does that tell you anything? Because I had a former boss, and he was like a dead fish, and it drove me nuts. And I just feel like that was just an overall sort of characteristic of him as a boss, too.
Did you find that to be true?
Yeah. He was not a very good manager. And
well,
he had the worst,
you know,
handshake.
I think there's a lot that you can say in a handshake, and a lot of things that people do say, both in eye contact and in a handshake. So make sure that when you go in for an interview, whoever's listening today, make sure when you go in for that interview that you are walking in with absolute confidence. not arrogance, but confidence, knowing what you have to offer, nice firm handshake and eye contact. And that alone will speak volumes before you ever open your mouth about your experience in life.
Okay. And with regards to the questions again, Tamara, that they're asking you, how best do you present yourself? Like short, simple answers? I'm assuming the more you ramble, the more you're going to get yourself into trouble.
Well, I mean, what I tell everybody is have a unique selling proposition. And that is pretty much a 3 or 4 sentence a paragraph, if you will, about yourself that answers the what, the how, and the who. And the what do I do, how do I do it, and who does it affect positively.
Okay.
You need to be able to bring that into the table so that when someone says, tell me about yourself, you aren't rambling on and on. You have a very concise, clean-cut answer that highlights who you are and what you have to offer.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier that companies enjoy when they get questions back from the job candidate. What types of questions do you ask back to your interviewer?
Well, first thing I would do is say, you know, I've researched your company. I mean, that's just a line that always impresses. I've researched a company, and I know how long you've been in existence, and I know how many offices you have, and I know about your product. I mean, you need to know things before you go in. And then, once you've done that research and you know things about the company, then you actually can think of intelligent questions to ask.
Okay, okay.
You're educated, so you know what to ask. I can't give you a blanket statement. I mean, you obviously need to ask questions like what will the job entail? How many hours a week will I be working? Will there be travel involved? Things like that that will give you some indication of what your commitment level is going to be. Those are important questions.
And the all-important money question, how do you handle that? Like, as I hate, because one of the job interviews I had several years ago, you know, they're like, well, what do you think we should pay you? And I hate that. Like, how do you deal with that?
But they're going to ask you that. Okay. Why will they ask you that? Because they hope you'll come at a number considerably lower than what they may have offered you in the first place. Now, here's how you combat that. You absolutely research range of salaries in your geographic location for that particular job. You go in and you Google search it and you find out what people are getting paid in your geographic area for that particular position.
Okay.
Then you're armed and dangerous when you go in. Then you can actually answer that question with some objectivity.
Okay, I hate that question. I hate when I know they're trying to do it, like you said, to end up paying you less. But it's just, I feel like it's such an unfair way that they go at it.
It is unfair, but Kelly, if you go in and you know what people are getting paid for that particular type of job in your particular part of the country, then you can at least answer intelligently. You can say, well, you know what, I've done some research, and I know that the range of salary is between $20,000 and $28,000, and quite frankly, I think I'm absolutely would like to see a $25,000 salary annually.
Okay.
So now you've got you're armed and dangerous. Don't go without knowledge.
Okay, perfect. Joining us on the show is Tamara Nashman, an educator and author of the book, 5 Secrets to a Successful Interview. Check out our website, TamaraNashmanInterviewDoctor.com. How do you tackle being persistent in going after the job without annoying the HR department?
Well, there are just rules of protocol that are very simple, really. Once you have the interview and you've gone in for the interview, then you need to follow up immediately with a handwritten thank you note.
Wow, okay.
Believe me, that is a huge issue because no one does that, do they?
No, no. Nope.
Everybody does everything by email. And you can certainly follow up with an email that maybe says the same thing that you say in your handwritten note. But always send a handwritten note to the person who interviewed you. So don't leave without knowing first name, last name, and how to get a thank you note to them. Within 1 week, you need to call that person.
Okay.
And say, thank you so much for this interview. I'm very interested in the job. Is there any more information that you need from me? Is there anything else I can send you or any way I can help answer any of your questions? I mean, definitely do that. And then you wait again. If you want to call later, call 2 weeks after that. And then at some point, they're going to give you an indication of interest or lack thereof.
Something that I saw in the notes when I was researching you, Tamara, what are the 5 things to never say and do in an interview?
Okay. Well, there are actually, you never get into your personal issues as far as I just got divorced or my child died last week, or you know what I'm saying. You don't get into extremely personal things, and also you know, maybe your sexual orientation or socioeconomic background. Certain things, you just don't go into those areas. You keep them personal. You keep them private. At the same time, you can make a personal connection with your interviewer by talking about your life somewhat. You just have to keep personal issues, really truly personal issues, out of it. Very importantly, don't ever go and chewing gum. Hello?
Yeah.
Can you believe that people actually do
that? I can't even understand that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you never go in with shoes that are scuffed or in any way messy, dirty, whatever. Here's something very important. Before you go into that interview, step into the bathroom, take a look at yourself to make sure you don't have a spot on your shirt, your hair's not sticking up funny, you don't have spinach in your teeth, you don't, and a lot of times that happens. And if you walk into an interview with something that's not quite right, then that's what the guy's eyes are. Have you ever seen that Tide commercial with stain stick?
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, it's the talking stain, right?
Yeah.
Or the talking spinach in the teeth or whatever. So have I listed five? I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're about at four, maybe one more.
Probably more than that. So, but those are just a few things you really need to be very cautious of.
Okay. And Tamara, if for some reason, you know, you don't get the job you really wanted, and I guess right now I'm specifically speaking for university grads because it is a bit of a hard knock life when you come out of university and then expect.
Huge.
So if you don't get that job, which happened to me years ago, how do you sort of avoid doubting yourself because you are going to have to pick yourself up and continue to search for something else?
There's absolutely no question. That's devastating. I mean, there's a lot of devastating blows in life, and we all know that. I think intrinsically you have to really come to terms with who you are and what you have to offer, because if you don't believe in who you are and what you can bring to the table, then you're defeated from the get-go, and no one's going to be able to change that for you. And I always tell people, because I have consultations with people all the time that call me, Tamara, what am I going to do? I didn't get the job I wanted, and I've been out there interviewing and knocking on doors, and nothing's opened up for me. And I always say, you know, persistence is key, absolutely key. You simply don't give up, and you always remind yourself. And if you need to keep a list of those amazing things about yourself that should be reason for you to be hired, then do that and keep the list where you can see it so that you're self-motivated enough to believe in your gifts and talents and not to give up.
Awesome. Tamara, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Kelly, I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on the show.
That's Tamara Nashman, an educator, guest speaker, and again, author of the book, 5 Secrets to a Successful Interview. Check out her website, TamaraNashmanInterviewDoctor.com.
Living, laughing, loving, learning.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
It's no secret that we love to laugh here on The Kelly Alexander Show, and a comedian that I want to bring to your attention is someone who you've probably seen in movies, but maybe you haven't quite figured out who he is. His name is Zach Galifianakis, and recently he was in a movie with Robert Downey Jr. called Due Date, which I think sort of brought him to the attention of a lot more people. But he's also been in The Hangover as well as Dinner with Schmucks, not to mention he has quite the underground following, and a little sort of series that he had going on called Between Two Ferns, where he interviews several A-list celebrities, and it's very, very funny. So check it out if you can. But right now, I would like you to hear Zach doing some stand-up where he was a guest on the Conan O'Brien show, and he's just fantastic. And if you're not a fan now, you will be after you listen to this. Zach Galifianakis on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hello, my name is Zach Galifianakis, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm named after my granddad, my middle name. My name is Zach Granddad Galifianakis. I was Febrezing my beard today. Thinking about what I was going to talk about, and I think I'm just going to open up and talk. Please be quiet, I'm very interesting. My brother has ADD, which is weird because he drives a Ford Focus. I told my brother that joke and he didn't laugh because he got distracted by a squirrel. I went to my high school reunion not too long ago, and that was something. I was homeschooled. So it's just me there next to a bowl of punch listening to Kool and the Gang. Talking about how fat I've gotten. I have gotten fatter, which sucks because I'm claustrophobic. At what age do you tell a highway it was adopted? I think around 7, because they start thinking, I don't look like the Kiwanis Club. My agent called me the other day and she was like, Zach, you have an audition for a Triscuits commercial. And I said, is there any nudity? And she said, yes. And I said, I don't have to make love to a cracker, do I? Okay, that's not true. I just wanted to write a joke where the punchline was, I don't have to make love to a cracker, do I? Which would be different if I were a black comedian. I want to open a maternity shop and call it We're Screwed. I think that sign in neighborhoods that says slow children playing is so mean. I like to go to the Olive Garden by myself on Saturday nights and have the waiter sing that happy birthday song to me. And just sit there and cry. My girlfriend looks a little bit like Charlize Theron and a lot like Patrick Ewing. The president's dog's name is Miss Beasley. I can't believe the president's dog and my penis have the same name. Thank you very much.
A lot of people are creative and don't like to live in a box. And one of the ways that you can sort of express yourself is through body art. And that includes piercings. And someone who knows a lot about this is Devin Wood. He's a piercer at Slick's Tattoo here in Montreal and is ready to give us the 411 on this ancient art. Devin, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Why, thank you.
Devin, now, to start off, you and I have never met in person. But
nope.
Anyone I've ever known who's worked in a tattoo parlor that does piercings definitely has some of their own. So can you tell us what you've got pierced? Because I'm sure it's very cool.
Right now, I actually have a bunch I've taken out. But right now I have 2-gauge conches, inner conches. I have stretch to 1-inch earlobes. And I have my nipples pierced. That's it so far that I have left.
It sounds like you guys have special shop talk for the type of tattoos, or I guess the different body parts. What are some of these body parts and the names of the actual tattoo? Because I guess there's like an official name for maybe getting your belly button pierced.
Oh, do you mean piercings or tattoos?
Oh, sorry, piercings, yeah.
Yeah, there's like the navel.
Okay.
And so you wouldn't say belly button because there's the navel. The eyebrow, nostril, septum, cartilage, inner ear, helix, inner ear conch. Higher, lower conch. There's a bunch of them.
Wow.
I can go on and on and on.
And how did you decide to get involved in piercing?
That's a good question. I guess I thought it was cool.
Okay.
And when I don't know, I always enjoyed it, like getting it done. So it sort of came naturally. I asked the person who was actually leaving if they could put in a good word for me, and it worked out.
And is it difficult to do what you do, Devin?
I'd say it's probably difficult just as much as you put in the work. Like, you know how martial arts masters will end up being martial art masters?
Yeah.
It's sort of the same thing. I mean, if you put in the work over the years, chances are you'll end up being good. But it's not as easy as it seems.
Okay. That's what I didn't think so. To me, it looks like just, you know, if you're doing tattoos or piercings. It definitely is an art, and you have to sort of know what you're doing. And obviously there are some good piercers and bad piercers. So
absolutely. There's a lot of things that go into like a piercing. I mean, maybe you'll just see them put their gloves on. They have no idea. Like, you have no idea what's going on. But in the piercer's mind, you're thinking of, you know, okay, put the gloves on, one hand, put it on. You know, you're thinking of all these things at once, like different, like, precautions and things when you're setting up and stuff like that people don't really notice.
And can you tell us some of the precautions that you guys have to take when you have clients coming in? Because I know a reputable place like you guys are very cautious of that.
First of all, I'd probably call myself a germ freak.
Oh, good.
Just to lay that on the board. But there's all kinds of precautions. Just a simple, like, to throw it out there, there's the standard precautions. It's where basically you treat everyone as if they were infected with some sort of disease. So basically the standard precaution is, no matter what you're doing to anybody, it's as safe as it can be. Do you want me to go into details?
Yeah, go ahead.
Number one, probably hand washing.
Okay.
Hand washing is extremely important. There's also that, and a lot of shops, what you really need is different areas in a shop. You need, you know, your piercing room, you know, you need your waiting room, your stock room, your sterilization room. Different areas where you're not, you know, you shouldn't be doing certain things. Like, you should never be eating in a piercing room, or you should never be eating or drinking in a tattoo area, because a lot of the airborne, pathogens can become airborne. And basically, you want to avoid these things entering, you know, mucous membranes like your nose, your mouth. So basically, for a piercing, the way I sort of set up is, first of all, first thing I do is I wash my hands. Then I don a pair of new gloves. Then I pull my dental bibs out. I pull my sterile instruments out. I pull everything out. Then I take my gloves off, wash my hands again. Then I open the instruments, put them on their sterile surfaces, including the tools and everything. Then you go for cleaning the area and marking it on the client. And then you change your gloves again. Then you, all the while, washing your hands in between. Basically, every time you take off gloves or put them on, you're going to be washing them.
Wow,
either before
amazing.
You put them on or after you take them. And then you go forward with the piercing. You put the jewelry through. Then you clean it up. Then you take your gloves off again, change them again, wash your hands again. Then you put your instruments away into a cold sterilizer.
Okay.
So basically, there's a lot of things you're thinking of. Like, I'm keeping it really simple here.
Yeah.
But, you're constantly aware of these things that, you know, you don't, you know, oh, I shouldn't touch this, or this is not sterile. So you're always aware of this, because you don't want to cross-contaminate your instruments.
That's amazing. I'm so impressed that you guys change the gloves that often. I had no idea. I had no idea. That's awesome. I figured you guys would do it at least two or three times during the procedure, but I had no idea it was like after almost like each step. So that's amazing.
Yeah, because you're cross-contaminating your surfaces otherwise. So.
Wow. Now, as a piercer, Devin, what are the most difficult areas to pierce? Because I'm assuming that, you know, you're basically on some sort of surface, and there's different nooks and crannies on the body. So I'm assuming it's difficult depending on what area you're in.
Absolutely. I mean, that goes for most piercings, it depends. It really depends on the person's anatomy itself. But difficult to pierce, the needles are pretty sharp. Most of the time, they go right through. But difficult as in, like, where you grasp it, or, like, the way you're
going to clamp? Just trying to get the right, you know, I guess, like you said, like, clamp down and make sure it's going through the right area.
That all depends, to be honest. I mean, I can't say, like, oh, a nipple piercing is the hardest, or this is the hardest, because it really depends on the person.
And the person's body type, body
structure.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. Joining us on the phone is Devin Wood, a piercer at Slick's Tattoo here in Montreal. Check them out on their Facebook page, which is Slick Styled Steel. Now, Devin, someone like myself who doesn't have, you know, much experience, I guess, in the world of piercing, what do you tell someone who wants to come in and get a piercing in a difficult area on the body? Because I'm assuming, like, people need to think before they leap.
By difficult, do you mean difficult to heal?
Yeah, like difficult to heal and maybe, you know, and just that they need to really think about it.
Probably any sort of surface piercing. Those have a tendency to either migrate or reject. Or like piercings where it just doesn't make sense. Like a horizontal tongue piercing, like you couldn't even fit the barbell, because if you're going to take your tongue and just let it rest in your mouth with your mouth closed,
mm-hmm.
it's nice and snug around your teeth. Now, if you were to add two balls to the end, it would not fit in your mouth. Not only thinking that you'd have to have a longer barbell to compensate for the swelling. So it's just types of things like that, that like those we just wouldn't do because it wouldn't make sense to do it. But otherwise, like tending to heal, it's mostly surface piercings.
And what does that mean, Devin? Like, what's a surface piercing?
Surface piercing is surface to surface. So basically it's one point that sticks out, then there's a little bar under the skin and another point that sticks out.
Okay. Okay. And I have a question for you as well, and I'm forgetting the name of the actual part, but you know, on the upper part of your ear, I heard that's a difficult place to heal. Is that true?
Your helix?
Yeah, maybe that's the word.
Any sort of cartilage piercing, whether it's your ear, your nostril, even sometimes you have a little bit, well, I mean, your navel itself is probably one of the hardest to heal just because it's in a very avascular part of your body.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of blood flow goes to it.
Okay.
So this is also goes for the cartilage. And also the navel, because it's in an inconvenient spot. You know, whether you're taking your shirt off or washing, chances are you're going to end up nicking it a couple times. That and the cartilage, same thing. I mean, it can take a little while to heal, and you really got to baby them.
Okay. And actually, with regards to the navel piercing, that was a question I had as well, because my sister, for example, she got hers pierced and we were sort of going to do it together. But then I realized that I am in martial arts and I felt like that was a bad plan. So I'm assuming, like, if you're super sporty and you are in a contact sport or something like that, it's probably not a good idea to do that or nipple piercing, stuff like that, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. I mean, I used to do martial arts myself. I kept most of my piercings in.
Okay.
But I actually had to abandon a few just because it's way too inconvenient. I mean, you get hit in your face or you get, well, I mean, it's going to hurt regardless, but I mean, if you have a piercing, it'll mess you up. I mean, so it's either you choose between the piercing or the lifestyle. And most of the time you'll end up going for the lifestyle, which is why I think it's kind of important to put at least a minimal of thought into what you're going to do, just because, you know, I mean, as much as I like taking people's money, I'd rather be honest with them and tell them it's probably a bad idea.
And do you guys have age restrictions, Devin, like for people, or do they need parental consent, I guess, if they're under 18?
We won't go any younger than 14, and that's with parental consent. And that also depends on the piercing as well. And it's 16 without parental consent, also depending on what kind of piercing, or it can also be 18.
Okay.
Without parental consent, depending
and
on the piercing as well.
Do you get, you know, Devin, because I know you're in there, you know, working hard every day, I guess I would have a concern for teenagers coming in that want to do, whether it's a piercing that they might want to rethink 2 or 3 years down the line, or even like a tattoo that they might want to rethink 2 or 3 years down the line. What do you do when you get the teenagers that come in and are just all gung-ho to do whatever?
I try and be honest with them. I mean, I've been a teenager myself. I've done a couple of stupid things, but I learned from it. So I try and tell them, like, you know, take your time to think. The chances are they're not going to listen to me regardless,
mm-hmm.
but I just try and be honest with them and tell them, I mean, it's a lot better to get it done professionally than have your buddy do it. A lot safer, too.
With regards to, I suppose, certain piercings like an eyebrow ring or what have you, do you get a lot of requests for them? Like, what are the most requests you get, I guess, is where I'm going?
I'd have to say it depends on the time. I mean, sometimes you get a bunch of nipples in a row, then, you know, you'll be quiet for the nipples for a good, you know, month or so, and then you'll hit something else like navels or, you know, it all really depends, to be honest.
Okay, so and do you ever find, like, if there's a celebrity or something that gets something done that you see?
I was actually going to say that, mention, like, yeah, it's probably in the media or something, and then bang, people go crazy. And
okay.
Just like actually this morning, yesterday someone called in to ask for a consultation with one of our artists, and usually that's standard. Okay, they want to get a tattoo. But so they came in this morning, and they actually asked if the artist could actually copy all of Lady Gaga's tattoos and put the stencils on her, just the stencils.
Wow.
So that's pretty special.
That's a little intense, I have to say.
Yeah,
although,
it's a little bit crazy.
Although I have to say I'm a big Janet Jackson fan, and I've met some other, you know, ardent Janet fans, and I've met at least 4 or 5 of them, females and males, that actually have a picture of Janet, you know, of some picture of her on their body. I did not go that
absolutely.
Route.
Absolutely. I have a Wu-Tang tattoo.
Oh, do you?
I mean, okay. I'm just saying, like, the fact that she actually just won, I thought it was kind of funny.
Wow. So. That's awesome. And
yeah.
I guess, Devin, what do you tell someone who, because really, like, I'm very tame. Like, I mean, I really did want the navel piercing about 10 years ago and then, you know, realized with the martial arts it wasn't going to work out. But, you know, if you have someone that really wants to do this, and I'm even talking about somebody that's a bit older, because sometimes, you know, you get people that are turning 30 or 40 and they're like, I got to do something.
Absolutely.
What do you say to these people?
About what?
Like if they come in and do you guys, like, because I know for tattoos you do consultation. Do you guys do that for piercings
absolutely.
Too?
Absolutely. I mean, if they have questions, they come in, I'm glad to answer them. I'm always honest with them. If you know, it's going to be inconvenient for them, I let them know.
Okay.
Or if, you know, they're going to have trouble healing it, or, you know, whatever they're worried about. Like, if they ask me if it's going to hurt, of course it's going to hurt. Questions like that, like, I mean, I'm not going to be blunt with them either, but I'm just saying, like, you know, I'm honest. I'm straightforward about it.
Okay. And with regards to healing, just a question on that as well. How important is it for people to follow your instructions?
Very important. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say mostly teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll explain it to them. We even give them an aftercare sheet, everything. But, you know, what I tell them to do and what they do out there is two different things. I mean, and then they might come back and go, well, oh, why is this happening? And I ask them, have you been touching it? And yeah, why? And it's that sort of thing that's a bit frustrating sometimes, but,
okay.
You know, I understand. I've been that age and, you know, I'm a bit hard-headed myself. But it's stuff like that that, you know, you really wish that they'd listen a little more.
Okay. And actually something as well that just came to mind, because like I said, I only have my my ears pierced. And the funny thing is I did them on two different occasions. I did it in grade 9 just to get my regular ears pierced. And then
yeah.
I did in grade 11, I got like a second piercing just on one earlobe. And
yeah.
And both times, like these were 2 years apart, I had the worst time of them healing. Does that mean that I would have experienced problems as well if I had chosen to do, you know, a piercing somewhere else? Like, is it your body that really was like, because I just felt like I couldn't, my sister was really shocked too, because I wasn't playing with them. I was doing what I was told. I'm one of these people that follows instructions fairly well. And my sister couldn't believe, she's like, I can't believe how many infections you're getting. Like it took X amount of months, it felt like, for my ears to heal. So does that translate to other problems had I chosen to get like a navel piercing or?
Did you get it pierced with a gun?
Yes.
That's probably one of the reasons.
Okay.
I mean, just because a gun, it can't be properly sterilized.
Okay.
Because of it being in plastic.
Okay.
So basically, it wouldn't survive a cycle in an autoclave. So basically, when someone gets pierced with a gun, the blood aerosolizes. It becomes microscopic particles. It gets inside the gun. So even if they wipe it down, you know, clean it, I mean, chances are there's still a lot of bacteria and viruses in the gun.
Okay.
And since a lot of those same bacteria and viruses have motility, which
okay.
is the characteristic to move on its own, chances are it could end up in a wound. I mean, but if, I mean, sometimes piercings just, they don't want, your body just rejects them. It just says, nope, screw this, I'm not paying attention. I mean, even if, in all ideal cases, I mean, it's a body. It's not like a predictable thing. I mean, you know, there's different factors that will end up playing different things.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, because I was worried, like, not worried, but that was sort of one of the reasons why I didn't pursue other piercings, too, because I was like, wow, I went through such a heck of a time with this. I'm like, this might not work well somewhere else either.
Was it done in a professional studio? Or?
No. I mean, it was, I was in a, I think I was, you know, at the mall or something.
Yeah.
My sister took me.
They probably had different aftercares and probably
yeah.
not really reasonable. That's why I always tell people when I give them piercing, you know, don't listen to your friends, don't listen to, you know, listen
mm-hmm.
to what we tell you. If you have any questions, feel free to call, you know.
Okay.
But sometimes it's still, you know, I mean, the aftercare regime is very important. I mean, it's not really the products you're going to put on your body that are going to heal it. It's
okay.
your body that's going to heal the piercing.
Do you find, like, what, and I suppose, again, you're probably going to tell me it depends on the person's body, but are there specific body parts that are more apt to get infections? I'm assuming like the navel, right?
It really depends. Once again, I mean, more apt to infection or irritation, because those are two different
things. I guess
things.
Infection, I would say. Irritation, I can
see.
Any
piercing, it's the same rate of infection. I mean, if you're going to play around with it, chances are it'll get infected, or if you're not going to clean it, it'll get infected. But, like, any sort of piercing, like, you know, like an anus piercing, I'd say, whoa, 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 that's way too prone to infection.
Okay.
Because the bacteria, you know, like piercings that aren't really advised, stuff like that. But most of them are more, like, infection is probably about the same, because it's really keeping it clean, which counts. But prone to irritation, that's a different story. Like, a lot of cartilage piercings are more prone to irritation. A navel piercing is probably the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
Surface piercings as well, if they're done in inconvenient spots where you're going to get it caught on your clothes, stuff like that, then it's a different story.
Okay. And, Devin, you said your ear, what's the one where you said your ear is stretched out? That you have one of those, right, you said?
Yeah, in my earlobes. Both my earlobes are stretched. For
now, if you decided to take those out, would they go back to their standard position or no?
No, never.
Okay.
I mean, even a normal earring, like a 18 gauge, you know, the thinnest you can possibly get,
mm-hmm.
it's still not going to close up. Even
okay.
if you've had it, like if you take it out and you've had it for about a year, you take it out, it's still, that hole's still going to be there forever.
Okay.
But it just won't be noticeable. I mean, it'll shrink up,
yeah.
but it'll never close.
Okay. And what are your opinions? And I have to ask you this because as a radio announcer, I think it's important for me. What do you say to people who get, you know, want to get their tongues pierced? Because I'm wondering, and I heard that a couple of singers who had this done, it impeached their ability to sort of sing as they had in the past. So I'm assuming you need to be careful if you go that route, if you need to speak for a living.
Yeah, I mean, maybe for the first week, because that's when it's going to be really swollen. Like, you know, if you're working a telemarketing job or something, I'd say, you know, do it on your week off.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it shouldn't affect it. I mean, I had my tongue pierced for about 4 or 5 years and never had a problem.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's good to know because I was wondering how that worked out.
It depends if it was done properly or not. I guess it probably depends as well.
Okay. Well, I might wait on the tongue piercing, but I'm going to come see you if I do. Devin, thank you so much for your time. It's been awesome.
No problem. It was fun.
That's Devin Wood, a piercer at Slick's Tattoo in Montreal. Make sure to check them out on their Facebook page, Slick Styled Steel.
Bring on the remix.
Beyonce with Run the World Girls, remixed by Steamweaver, right here on The Kelly Alexander Show. Well, thank you so much for hanging out on the show this week. As always, I appreciate your time, and a shout out as well to my guests, Tara Nolan, Devin Wood, and Tamara Nashman. It was so much fun having them join us this week. Now, by the way, don't forget, there's still time for you to be involved in our Kelly Alexander Show web contest. All you have to do is go to the website,
www.kellyalexandershow.com. Click on the win button and you could be in to win a $50 gift certificate to Amazon. A little quiz is involved, but it's a lot of fun. So check it out, www.kellyalexandershow.com. And please join me next week on the show because our special guest, he joins us every now and then, our relationship coach, Frank B. Kermit, back in full effect to talk about compromise and respect in a relationship. Very important stuff, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Have a great week. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.